This is Audible.
Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Rebel Fairy by Rachel Morgan. Narrated by Amanda Dolan. Prologue. It was embarrassing. Violet could hardly believe Ada had managed to corner her, Rin, and Dash inside a circle of jagged glass. They were guardians, for goodness sake. Before the former head counselor publicly exposed all guardians with griffin abilities, she and Rin had been two of the best, and she liked to think they'd only got better since then. Fighting Ada should be easy. But it was her glass statues that were the problem. Ada herself, who turned out to be a wispy woman with blonde and pale pink hair, now that she'd removed her mask and hooded cloak, could turn anyone to solid glass with a single touch. Those statues had become animated and were now fighting for Ada, their movements as fast as if they were still made of flesh. What worried Violet the most, though, was whether the touch of these glass soldiers was as lethal as Ada's touch. Violet wasn't sure, but she couldn't take the risk. And that meant she couldn't get close enough to properly fight off these beings. All around them, across the small floating island known as Velazar II, the battle between Guardians and Unseelie Fae raged on. The veil had somehow resealed itself, instead of being torn further, but rather than abandon their cause, this only made the Unseelies fight harder. Two glass soldiers lunged toward her, drawing her attention away from the outer battle and back inside the circle. She ducked down, rolled to the side, and sprang up again, an arrow materializing at her fingertips. The bow appeared in her other arm, and within a second, her arrow was flying straight at one of the soldiers. He shattered into thousands of glittering shards as the other soldier, closer now, swung at her again. His shoulder almost grazed her arm, but she jerked out of the way just in time. As she spun back around, her bow raised a second time. Rin's glittering sword came down upon the glass man's head. He broke apart almost instantly. Then, something changed. The dozens of jagged glass pieces forming the circle began tumbling over one another, heading for the center of the circle. Ada's little fighting ring was growing rapidly smaller. Violet tossed yet more magic at the encroaching glass soldiers as she backed up a few steps, closing the space between her, Rin, and Dash. Rin swung his blade again, and a spray of splinters flew through the air as another soldier went down. Stop! As Violet ducked to avoid the splinters, she looked to where the shout had come from and noticed someone racing away from the battle and toward Ada. Emerson? She wondered, surprise jolting through her. It certainly looked like her, but what was she doing here, of all places? The soldiers inched closer, and the glass circle grew smaller, and Em's shouts reached Violet's ears. Stop! Ada! Stop! Ada, please! Unable to pause long enough to shout a warning at Em, Violet gripped two guardian knives in her hands and threw them at her nearest glass opponent. With a quick twist to the side, he dodged the one, but the other struck his chest, turning him to a pile of glittering shards. Please! They're my parents! At first, the words made no sense to Violet. Then she raised her eyes. She looked beyond the glass and saw Em's desperate face, looking straight past Ada and into the circle. At her. At Rin. And Violet's world came to a standstill. They're my parents. Her brain rejected the words immediately. Em obviously didn't mean what it sounded like she meant. This was a trick to get Ada to stop her attack. A trick that made no sense, but still a trick. It isn't true, Violet's brain repeated. But as she looked across the floating island at the girl who'd stumbled so unexpectedly into her life, she saw several things at once. She saw her son's face, full of terror, after waking from a nightmare. Younger and more boyish than Em's face, yet undeniably similar in this moment. She saw Calla and Chase whispering together, always out of Violet's earshot, whispering that had only begun after Em disappeared. She saw Calla's absolute insistence on finding Em and bringing her back at all costs. She saw a glass arm sweeping straight toward her face. A blade flashed through the air, severing the arm from its body. The glass soldier fractured and fell in gleaming pieces to the ground. Violet barely saw it. Her eyes were trained on M as Ada threw her onto the ground and launched herself at the girl. "No, no, no!" Violet gasped. Dash shouted something and moved in front of her, blocking her view of M. His words were as indistinct echo, as she tried desperately to see past him. "Vi!" he repeated, grabbing her shoulder and shaking her. "You have to keep fighting!" He whirled around, shoved another glass soldier back with the edge of his crossbow, then shot him. He jumped back quickly, pushing Violet out of the way, as glass fell to the ground near their feet. Violet steadied herself, looking back around immediately to where Ada had M pinned to the ground. "Don't you dare touch her!" The thought flashed fiercely through her mind as she narrowed her eyes, raised her arms, and took aim the moment the bow and arrow appeared. She let go. A second later, the arrow struck its target. Ada cried out and looked around at the arrow protruding from her shoulder. Violet wasted no time fitting a second arrow against the glittering bowstring. As Ada rolled out of the way, someone tugged urgently on Violet's arm, causing her arrow to shoot into the sky. "We have to jump!" Rin shouted at her. "Over the glass! Now!" She looked about and saw that every opponent within the circle was gone, and the encroaching glass shards that had formed the circle were about to reach them. "Jump!" Rin yelled. She hesitated only a moment before bending slightly, then launching away from the ground. She cleared the glass easily, as did Rin and Dash. "Where is she?" Rin asked, whipping around immediately and looking back to where Ada and M had been moments ago. Violet didn't have time to answer, as yet more guardians, who'd been turned to glass, rushed toward them. She felt oddly detached from the scene as she fought back with weapons and magic, never getting close enough to let anyone touch her. It all became a confused blur as her mind spun in the background, trying to figure out how M's words could possibly be true. Guardians? Glass people? Unseelies? Guild transporter pods? Transporter pods. Those definitely hadn't been there when this fight began. After finishing off another animated statue, she looked around, searching for M again. There. She couldn't see Ada, but M was running toward what remained of the glass circle. "M!" Violet yelled. The girl looked up, her eyes searching until she found Violet. She altered direction, kept running, and then Violet cried out as a bright bolt of magic collided with M. She rolled several times before coming to rest face down on the ground. Violet started running, but someone caught hold of her arm and tugged her back. She barely had time to try and pull her arm free before she was forced to the ground. A man in a guild uniform loomed over her, and before she could react, something snapped painfully around her wrists. Guardian handcuffs, the golden sparkling kind she'd never be able to get off. As two guardians pulled her roughly to her feet, she heard Rin yelling, "Emerson!" Crappy crap crap. What had he seen? How badly was Emma injured? Was she dead? Violet struggled against her captors with all her might, managing to get an elbow in one guardian's face and a foot in the other's groin before a third appeared to assist in subduing her. Within seconds, her ankles were bound as well. "Em!" she shrieked, craning her neck to see what had happened to the girl. And finally, Violet caught a glimpse of her, sitting up, her hand pressed against her side. Their eyes met for one moment before the world tipped to the side, and Violet was tossed into a transporter pod, along with Rin and Dash. Several guardians jumped in after them, and the clear glass pod sealed itself shut. "No, wait!" Violet gasped. She paid no attention to the guardians moving to their positions within the pod. Two facing the front, three facing the captives. She rolled onto her side, pushed herself up, and shuffled in a wriggling fashion toward the glass. She pressed her bound hands against it. "Em!" she screamed as the girl clutched her side and stumbled toward them. The pod rose a few feet into the air and began moving away from her. "Turn this damn thing around!" Rin yelled from beside Violet. But the guardians, of course, didn't listen. Em was running after them now, shouting something, but she would never catch up to the pod. She dropped onto her knees at the edge of the island, still shouting. As the pod gained speed and shot away through the air, Em's kneeling form grew smaller and smaller, and Violet's heart was somehow full and broken at the same time. She let her hand slide away from the glass as she looked at Rin. "You heard what she said," Her voice came out hoarse. You heard it. Please tell me you heard. I heard it. Though his hands were also tied, Rin raised them and gripped Violet's arm. His eyes pierced hers. How could she be, if someone used a shapeshifter? Violet suggested. Like with my father. But a child? A baby? Can't control their shifting. It couldn't have been that. Changeling. Dash moaned from several feet away. He had a gash across his forehead and another one on his arm just above the handcuffs. He dragged himself toward Violet and Rin. There was a man in the Unseelie prison. Zed. He explained everything. Zed? Rin repeated, his tone sharp. Stop talking! One of the guardians snapped at them. He told Amy she was a changeling, Dash continued, ignoring the guardian as he dragged himself closer. He told her he stole her from a fairy guardian couple and replaced her with a human. He didn't say who her parents were. He collapsed against the curved glass of the pod, but she must have found out. Violet's chest rose and fell rapidly as her breath came in gasps and her eyes filled with tears. I can't believe it. I can't. She shook her head as Rin's fingers slipped away from her arm, and he pressed his bound fists hard against his chest. It's really true, he uttered. Victoria, Violet whispered. She isn't dead. She didn't die. And she was there, with us, at the Haven. And we let her go. I told you to stop talking, the Guardian repeated. And I told you to turn this damn thing around. Rin shouted right back. His voice shook. Violet could see the agony on his face, the ache of everyone's heightened emotions assaulting him. The guardian who'd shouted turned to the others and sighed. Please tell me you've gathered enough power. Just about, one of them answered. Then, yep, definitely enough for a few hours. The other one said, me too. The shield separating the rebels from the guardians vanished. Knowing what was coming, Violet reached quickly for Rin. She tugged his arm, and he looked around at her. We'll find her, she said, raising her hands to touch his face. Then the stunner spells flashed across the pod, and Violet knew nothing but darkness. Part 1. Chapter 1. Cold perspiration settles on my brow as I follow a golden-haired fairy through a busy clearing in the creepy hollow forest. We leave the chilly night air behind and enter the stuffiness of a guardian-filled bar. I spot other types of fae here and there, some with scaly skin, some with pointed ears, a woman with horns protruding from her forehead, which makes me feel a fraction better, but far too many men and women with swirling black patterns inked onto their wrists fill this place. I push my hands into the single front pocket of my hoodie, finding Bandit hiding there in his small furry mouse form. I wish I could hide, too. Boisterous laughter pulls my attention to the left. A guardian man and woman fall against each other while listening to someone relate a tale in animated fashion. Behind them, a man sitting alone in a booth reaches casually into the air. A knife appears in his grip, golden enchanted light glinting off its blade. He uses the knife to flip the cap off the bottle of whatever he's about to drink. His eyes catch mine for a moment before he lets go of the knife. It vanishes, and he lifts the bottle to his lips. This is madness, I whisper to Calla as we make our way casually toward the bar. Everyone's going to realize we don't belong here. They won't. This place is open to anyone in Creepy Hollow who feels like relaxing after a hard day's work. Sure, it's mainly frequented by guardians, but no one will look twice at two reptilian women who've just walked in. I swallow and look down at my hands, which appear to be covered in fine blue-green scales. Are you absolutely sure that's what they can see? I know that's what I can see, but if Calla isn't projecting her illusion far enough, then any of the guardians inside this bar can see exactly who we are. And while they may not recognize Calla, it's been almost 20 years since she fled the guild, They'll almost certainly recognize me, the griffin-gifted girl whose enchanted voice can command anything. The girl who caused quite a fuss when she escaped the guild recently and led numerous guardians into a fight with a bunch of unseelie fairies at the edge of a cliff. Hey, Calla turns to face me. Are you still doubting my ability? Even after we walked unseen past dozens of unseelie guards and escaped that strange gray place? I raise both eyebrows at the memory of how we came exceptionally close to not escaping the shadow world. A guard came along to put a magic-blocking band around my wrist, but Calla tricked him with an illusion. We got out of my cell and made it into the castle under the cover of invisibility. We hunted through almost every room for the black traveling candles before realizing Rourke must have moved them all. Knowing those candles were our best option for escaping the shadow world, I told Calla we had to keep searching. Finally, we found the room Rourke appeared to be using as his operation center. We listened in as he shouted at one of his guards. After he dismissed the man and stormed out, we snuck inside and found ourselves caught in a spell that flipped us upside down and suspended us in the air in the room's doorway. Guards came running. Rourke came running. Calla managed to cut us free from the spell that held us in the air. Mayhem ensued as we hunted through drawers while Rourke and his guards, who could follow our movements even though they couldn't see us, tried to hit us with their magic. I found the candles inside Rourke's gigantic desk, and Calla and I escaped with partially singed clothes, a few minor wounds, and our lives intact. Well, no, I admit to Calla. I'm not doubting your ability, but our escape didn't exactly go the way we planned. Her lips twist into a smile. No plan ever goes the way it's planned. She looks around. Ah, there he is. Just stick close to me, Em. I swear I will not let a single person inside this bar see you as anything but a Reptisilla. As we approach Calla's guardian contact, Perry, I do my best to push away the concerns cycling repeatedly through my mind. What has the guild done to Vi, Rin, and Dash? Did Ada survive after I pushed her from the edge of Velazar Island? Do I need to be worried about Rourke coming after me? What happened to Aurora after I fled the Unseelie Palace? Stop, I tell my overworked mind. Vi, Rin, and Dash are the priority, and that's why Calla and I are here inside this bar. As she keeps telling me, we're going to get them back, and everything will be fine. I shove away the tiny voice that tells me that's not the way the world works. Just ahead of us, Perry is sitting on a stool at the bar, asking for a drink. Calla trips forward, knocks into Perry's shoulder, and catches herself against the bar. Oh, excuse me, Perry says, turning swiftly. I'm so sorry. No, I'm the one who should be apologizing, she says with an easy laugh. My mind is elsewhere, and I wasn't watching my feet. Oh, hey, don't I know you? She adds, her smile spreading wider as she leans against the bar beside him. I'm from the Reptisilin Protectors Institute. I think we collaborated together on that case with the invisible leprechaun. Perry's smile freezes. Calla? He asks with lips that barely move. Don't be weird, she instructs. Perry lets out an unnatural laugh. You're being weird. Hey, so, how are you doing? A forced smile pulls his lips up. It's been too long. I've been expecting you to message me for ages. He lowers his voice. For hours, I've been checking my amber every minute for hours. After hearing from one of our mutual friends that M was taken and you had followed her and our favorite unseelie fairy. I'm so sorry about that, Calla says lightly, her perfect smile still in place. I would have messaged if my amber hadn't fallen out of my pocket when I was dangled upside down by said unseelie fairy. Fortunately, my assignment partner and I... She places her arm around my shoulders and pulls me against her side. Managed to escape this dangerous mission unharmed. Perry's eyes move to me. Em? Yeah. Hi. I lift my hand and give him a small wave. Oh, thank goodness. His gaze moves back to Calla. I've been so worried that maybe we should catch up someplace quieter, Calla suggests, This bar has always been a little too noisy for me. Right, of course. Takes a good deal of self-control to stroll out of the bar instead of running for my life, which every instinct in my body tells me I should do. I breathe in a cool breath of relief once we're back outside. We stride away without hesitation, and we're soon lost in the bustle of activity in the clearing. Though it's nighttime, stores are open on either side of the wide walkway. Signs floating above tree doorways announce the names of the stores. Candy Sparkles, Musical Mayhem, and numerous other fascinating places I'd love to explore if my current purpose in life wasn't strictly focused on rescuing the people I just discovered are my family. We head along the pathway and into the trees, where tiny insects glow in the branches above us, and pedestrian activity is minimal. As we come to a stop, Perry makes a series of discreet but complicated movements with his hands while whispering words too quiet for me to hear. Silvery dust appears in the air and floats down unto us. Wary of anything in this world that I don't already know about, I try to swat it away. "Don't," Calla says, catching my hand. "It's to keep anyone from overhearing us."
"So you don't have an amber anymore," Perry says. "But instead of returning to your haven and using someone else's to contact me and arrange a meeting, you decide to walk into the most popular guardian bar in Creepy Hollow?"
"Yes, because I know how to conceal myself, and because Em and I don't want to waste any time. We need to find out what happened to Vi, Rin, and Dash. I know you've probably already passed on whatever you've heard to someone at the haven, but I don't want to hear this information secondhand, and I don't have time for a whole load of questions about where Em and I have been. So please, tell me exactly what you know, so I can free my family before they're permanently locked up somewhere." Perry looks at me and hooks his thumb toward Calla.
"She's bossy, isn't she?"
"Perry," Calla and I say at the same time.
"Gee, sorry, I get it. This is important."
"It's more than important," I tell him. "They're my... I mean..." I cut myself off, not because I want to hide who I am from him, but because we don't have time for explanations of exactly how I turned out to be the supposedly dead Victoria Larkinwood. "Just tell us where they are so we can get them back." "I don't think I like that we," Calla mutters, looking at me. "But we can argue about whether you're involved in this plan or not once we know what we're up against."
"Hey, that part is not negotiable," I tell her. "I know I can't fight like you can, but my ability can do amazing things when it's powered up. I closed the veil, remember? And I'm partly responsible for them being captured. So I want to do everything I can to, if the two of you would let me speak," Perry says, "you'd know that your plans to rush into an immediate rescue mission are futile."
"What?" we demand, together, once again.
"Okay, not futile, exactly, but you can't do anything right now."
He swats at a bulbous, glowing insect, drifting lazily past his face.
"Vi and Rin have already been taken to Noxum, and Dash is in a holding cell at the Guild, which neither of you can enter unless I sneak into places I'm not supposed to be and spend hours disarming the Griffin ability alarm."
"Noxum? Damn it." Calla places her hands on her hips and turns away. "I figured if they were in transit somewhere, like sailing to Velazar, we could intercept them."
I frown.
"Why would they be going back to..."
"Oh, not the same Velazar where the tear was." "No, the other one," Perry says. "There are two Velazars. Confusing, I know. The Guild split the island in half, so the one part could remain stationary with the gap over it, and the other part with the prison could continue to..."
"Perry," Calla says. "Not really the time for a history lesson."
"Right. Got it. So Dash's crimes aren't considered as serious as Vi and Rin's," Perry continues. "He's being charged with conspiring with Griffin rebels and passing information to them, and he's awaiting trial. Vi and Rin, however, were taken straight to the Noxum facility. No trial, no questions asked."
"What's the Noxum facility?" I ask. Perry's gaze flicks back to Calla for a moment before he answers me.
"A prison."
"And they call it a facility? That makes it sound even worse."
"Because it is,"
Calla mutters. She's pacing now,
her hands still on her hips. And no trial? I add. Can I point out once again that your lawmakers don't seem to be particularly law-abiding?
You can, Perry sighs. Where Griffin Gifted Fae are concerned, it seems the guild counselors will do just about anything to apprehend them.
But Vi and Rin definitely aren't being executed, right?
Perry shakes his head. No, definitely not. No one's been executed since Princess Angelica and her witch accomplice. And even then, people thought the death penalty was a step too far. The next head counselor came up with the Noxum facility instead, although some people argue that death is preferable to whatever happens at Noxum.
What happens at... Okay, so this isn't what I was hoping for, Calla interrupts. But the good news is that Vi and Rin are alive. Now we just have to figure out how to free them. And once Dash has been moved from the guild, we can free him too.
Perry nods, then adds, if Flint doesn't do something before then.
What? Calla stops pacing. No, Flint mustn't do anything. My eyes jump back and forth between the two of them. Who's Flint?
Dash's father, Perry answers. He also works at the guild.
And if he does anything to free Dash, Calla says, the guild will almost certainly know it's him.
He's not stupid, Cal. He isn't going to get himself caught. And the guild has much bigger problems to worry about than Flint and Dash. Much bigger than the Griffin rebels, too, which is saying something.
What do you mean? Calla asks.
Do you have any idea of the mess going on in the non-magic realm right now because of the veil tearing further before it was closed? Humans think it's the apocalypse or something.
Calla lets out a grim sigh. Shoot. Of course. I was so focused on getting Em away from Rourke and then finding Vi and Rin that I didn't think about the consequences of what happened with the veil. I look away from both of them, pressing my fingers against my temples as guilt begins to gnaw at me. I should have been able to stop it in time. I could see it happening. The ground being eaten up, and then a house and people, and my stupid griffin ability just wasn't ready. Em, their world would be in a far worse position right now if you hadn't fixed the veil when you did. Calla reminds me. Your stupid griffin ability is amazing, and if every human knew what you did, they'd be eternally grateful to you for keeping the rest of their world intact. She looks at Perry. I assume this mess is too big for the guild to cover up. Too many people's memories to alter.
Exactly. Videos and photos spread almost instantly. I'd be surprised if there's anyone in their world who doesn't know by now. My sister said she saw it on the news. This big hole in the air, with people fighting on the other side, and their world slowly being sucked into the hole.
Holy heck. People could actually see that? Calla asks. Like, there was no glamour hiding it.
No, not once the hole began growing bigger, and the guardians casting the glamour ended up fighting on Seelies.
The human world has now seen things we've been hiding from them for centuries.
The theories are endless. Heaven, hell, parallel universes, magic, time travel.
Calla smacks one hand against her brow. Ugh, what a disaster.
Yeah, and on top of that, we have big problems in our own world. The Seelie King is threatening to declare war on the Unseelies because their prince fought a whole bunch of guild members and stopped their veil restoration spell.
Flipping heck. Calla slowly lowers her hand. She looks over her shoulder toward the clearing. Disaster on both sides of the veil, and everyone is just carrying on with business as usual.
Well, what else are they supposed to do? Perry asks. Your average fae can't help with something like this. So after gossiping about the terrible state of the world for a few hours, then yes, they go back to business, as usual. The Guild Council is obviously trying to find out exactly what happened, since the Unseelie King denies having anything to do with stopping the Veil Restoration spell. He says his son left the Unseelie Court, took half their army with him, and he has no idea of his whereabouts now.
He knows exactly where Rourke is, I say darkly. In the Shadow World... The world between this one and the non-magic one. Perry blinks.
The... what?
I look at Calla. If we're not racing off somewhere to rescue Vi, Rin, and Dash, then I assume we do have time for explanations. If you're talking about an entirely new world, then we definitely have time for explanations. Is that what that place was? The colorless place?
I tried to ignore the urgent prompting that I need to run, rescue, don't waste time. Yes, well, Rourke called it a world, even though I don't think it technically is one, but it's definitely separate from this world and the human world. Rourke thinks it came into existence when the veil was first torn. When the two worlds collided into each other, the bits of each world that everyone thought disappeared actually formed this new world. At least, that's what he thinks happened. It seems to exist in the same place as the fairy paths. Insane, Perry murmurs. It doesn't sound possible. Are you sure you weren't somewhere in the Fae realm that you've never been before? There are plenty of weird places in our world. I arch an eyebrow. I'm pretty sure Rourke wouldn't have been so excited about it if that were the case. And it just... it looks and feels different. Very different. Perry turns his frown on Calla. You've been there? Yes. I was holding on to M when someone summoned her there. And it's... Perry, I've never seen anything like it before. It definitely didn't feel like this world or the other one. That's why Rourke wanted to open the veil further instead of closing it, I explained to them. He wanted to make his new world bigger. Now that we've stopped him, I'm sure he's furious. Calla groans. Wonderful. So now we have two worlds in a mess, plus a third world with a ticked-off ruler who's probably looking to extend his realm in some other way. And if we went straight to the guild right now and offered our help, I'm sure they'd still rather lock us up than work with Griffin-gifted Fae. Or they'd rather sit back, have a drink, and do a fat lot of nothing, I mutter, gesturing over my shoulder toward the bar. Hey, if those guardians are in there enjoying a few drinks, it's because they've earned their time off, Perry says, the volume of his voice going up a few notches. There are guilds all around the world, which means plenty of guardians to try to fix them as left behind by that prince you almost married, so we don't all have to work on every problem at the same time. My mouth is dropped open by the time he's finished speaking. I can't believe you're defending these people who completely disregard their own laws, who talked about killing me if they couldn't keep me away from the Unseelies, who've now imprisoned people we care about, and who'd no doubt turn on you in an instant if they knew you helped us. Okay, calm down, Em, Calla says. And Perry, you're not usually so defensive. I'm defensive because we're not all like that. The wrong people keep getting elected into positions of power, which makes it almost impossible to change things. I'm actively searching for other guardians who don't agree with the guild policies on Griffin abilities, but when everyone's afraid of being labeled a guild traitor, it's a little bit difficult to organize any kind of official opposition. Several beats of silence pass before Calla says, Okay, clearly we're all tense at the moment, so it's easy for us to lose our tempers. We're all worried about the people we love, and Em and I are in desperate need of a bath and a meal. So we should probably head back to the Haven, clean up and eat something, and then plan with the rest of the team how we're going to get inside Noxum. I heave a deep breath and look down. My clothes are stained with the dirt I rolled across on Velazar, and both my jacket and hoodie are torn down the side where someone's magic struck me. Yeah, good idea. I glance up at Perry. Sorry I snapped at you. He smiles. Me too. Me three, Calla says. At Perry's questioning look, she adds, I'm pretty sure I snapped at you earlier, but I really appreciate you and all the risks you take for us. He rolls his eyes, and it's possible his cheeks turn just the slightest bit pink. Yeah, yeah, let's not get mushy now. Here, let me open a doorway for you ladies. He removes both his stylus and amber, but as he raises the stylus to the nearest tree, he pauses, his eyes focused on the amber in his other hand. Oh, no, he murmurs. Calla steps closer. What? A guild-wide memo. He looks up, his expression falling. What? What is it? His eyes drop to the amber, and he reads, 8 suspected members of the so-called Griffin Rebel Movement have been captured while trying to rescue known guild traitors Orin and Violet Larkinwood. No. Calla whispers. It's Chase. There are no names. She takes my hand. We need to get back home immediately. And together, we rush into the fairy paths. Chapter 2.
We're already running as a glimmer of light appears ahead of us. I expect hot sand and a blinding sun, but the light is dim, and the air that drifts across my skin is almost icy. Quickly, Calla says, pulling me across the sand, beneath a night sky, bright with a million stars. Our feet sink with every step, slowing us as we try to run toward the dome of magic that conceals the Griffin Rebels' hideout. Calla mutters something, and magic shoves us the final distance, launching us clear through the dome lair. I stumble and run forward a few steps as my feet hit the grass inside the oasis. The lush landscape is filled with giant trees, bushes laden with flowers, and a river tumbling over rocks in the distance. The breeze is just the right temperature, and a fresh floral scent fills my nose. It's a piece of paradise hidden in the middle of a desert. The last time I was here, creeping away with Danny's sleeping body, I thought I'd never see this place again. I figured the Griffin Rebels would never allow my mother and me back in when they discovered she and Ada, a fairy fond of killing people by turning them into glass, actually belonged inside the same body. Returning here, knowing that I belong here, that my family already lives here, is surreal. Em, come on. Calla calls back. She's already hurrying ahead of me. I run to catch up with her, looking up at one of the enormous trees with a stairway spiraling around its trunk and houses built onto the enormous upper branches. A few days ago, Danny was in one of those tiny houses. I picked her up with magic and walked right out of here. Guilt fills me every time I think of how I failed her. Instead of waking her and giving her a happy life, she ended up trapped inside a body that Ada controlled, and then pushed off the side of Velazar. As we run past the tree, I sense my griffin ability. The special magic that lends my voice incredible power has almost replenished itself. Out of habit, I look down at my wrist to check the level of the ruby's color. But my bracelet is gone, of course. Calla told me to throw it away after we escaped the Shadow World. Having been commissioned by a controlling Unseelie prince, she was worried it might have some kind of tracking enchantment on it. They shouldn't be able to detect it once you're beneath the Oasis Dome, she said. But it's better to be careful. We continue running, past the hammocks, past the house they call the Mountain, where meetings are held, and past the orchard. When we finally stop outside one of four little houses in a row, I bend over to catch my breath. Calla walks up the porch steps and knocks. Without waiting, she opens the door and walks inside. At that moment, my griffin ability's magic floods through my body. I concentrate fiercely for several moments, pushing it down so I can use it at another time instead of losing it all in whatever I say next. When I'm confident I've got it under control, I straighten and hurry into the house after Calla. Gaius? She's busy calling. Gaius, are you awake? I try to remember whether I've heard that name before, thinking back to the many things Vi and Rin's son, Jack, my brother. I remind myself with a startling jolt, told me the day I first got here. I remember he mentioned someone named Gaius. Uncle Gaius, he called him. He said Uncle Gaius was one of the people in charge here, but because he's sick, he doesn't come out of his house much. I follow Calla into a room that's part study, part living room, with plants crawling across almost every surface. A skinny man with hair pointing in every direction turns away from the window to face us. My mind has conjured up an image of someone old and frail, but of course, he looks about the same age as every other adult fairy I've met in this world. 30-something, at the most. Calla! He exclaims. Thank goodness, and it's M, right? He asks, looking at me. Have you heard? Calla asks before I can say anything. Do you know what's happened? Yes. His expression becomes somber. Vi and Rin were captured. We're doing everything we can to everyone who went to rescue them has been caught. Gaius freezes, with his mouth half open. His eyes widen further. Then he reaches with a shaky hand for the chair behind his desk. Slowly, he lowers himself into it. Who did you send? Calla asks. Was Chase there? No,
He hasn't returned from Lunar Mountain yet.
Calla breathes out heavily as she nods. So, who were the 8 people then?
Everyone mission approved who wasn't already out working on something.
Gaius reaches for a scroll of paper and pushes it across the desk toward Calla. Here's the list. She takes the paper while I fold my arms over my chest and hover nearby.
Darius, Lamethon, Orange.
Calla murmurs several other names, none of which I recognize.
Crap. Even Anna?
She adds.
Anna hates leaving the Oasis.
Yes, and once we get her back, I doubt she'll ever leave again.
Lowering the page, Calla asks, why did she go along in the first place? Gaius leans forward.
We had a meeting as soon as I received the news from Perry that Vi and Rin were being taken to the Noxum facility. Rather than spend more time planning, we collectively decided the sooner we carried out the rescue, the better. From what we know, the Noxum facility has several levels of security, and it takes some time for prisoners to be processed completely and placed within the torture simulation, so...
Torture? I interrupt, a sick feeling twisting in my stomach.
Yes, unfortunately, Gaius says, turning his serious expression toward. That's the way the Guild has chosen to operate these days when it comes to certain crimes, but as I was saying, the team assumed if they got there as soon as possible, they'd only need to break into the first level, or even better, they might arrive at the same time as Vi and Rin. This was never going to be a mission of stealth. They planned to cause as much havoc as possible and get Vi and Rin out of there while all the Noxum employees tried to figure out what was going on. It would seem, unfortunately, that this might have been a trap.
Calla shakes her head. They should have waited for me. My skills are invaluable in this kind of mission, you know that. I could have concealed everyone. And I could have commanded all the guards with my ability, I think to myself. But it's pointless to mention that now when it's too late.
How long were they supposed to wait for you, Calla? Gaius asks. Of course, they wanted you with them, but we had no idea where you were or when you'd return. Darius said you followed the Unseelies away from Velazar, and that was the last he saw of you. And even though the team didn't have your skills, they did have others. They took some of the abilities from the vault.
What? Calla's voice is almost a screech. You're the one who's always told us what a bad idea that is, that we shouldn't touch those abilities unless in extreme circumstances. Everyone voted, and they determined this situation to be extreme.
It's not just about getting Vi and Rin back. It's about everything they know. An entire community is at risk if our magical fail-safes don't hold.
Calla pushes her hands through her hair and begins pacing the small section of the room not covered by plants, books, scrolls, or furniture.
I know that, Gaius. I'm only repeating what you've always told us. And now, not only have we lost all those abilities,
what abilities? I ask, too curious now to remain silent.
We've lost almost everyone who can fight.
Calla finishes, either not hearing me or choosing not to answer.
We haven't lost everyone, Gaius counters, pushing away from the desk and standing. Those out on other missions will return soon.
And how many is that?
4 people, right? Chase, Kobe, and the Milling Jays?
Yes, and we can contact others. Elizabeth and Tilly.
Good luck finding either of them without Vi. And even if we do manage to find them, that makes only 7 of us in total.
8, I say, putting my hand up.
What? I add when they both look at me with doubt.
I have a Griffin ability. I can help. From the sounds of it, you'll need all the people you can get.
Calla moves a few steps closer to me.
Em, we need people who've done this kind of thing before. The Noxum guards will be expecting us, so we need to be ready to fight back. As long as Chase and I go, that's more than enough power to get our people out.
Her eyebrows pinch together as she looks back at Gaius. Assuming Chase returns soon.
Have you heard anything from him? I sent him a message saying we needed help at Velazar, but he hadn't got back to me yet by the time I lost my Amber. Gaius shakes his head as he moves around to the front of his desk. No, I've heard nothing. I'm sure he's fine, though. You know he goes silent sometimes in the middle of a mission, and this thing with the Argenti elves at Lunar Mountain is complicated. Kala sighs. Yes, I'm sure you're right. He's fine. Wait. I catch hold of her arm before she can start pacing again. Your Amber fell out of your pocket back at Rourke's castle. Doesn't that mean he'll be able to read all the messages people send to you before they realize you don't have that Amber anymore? Rourke could learn valuable information we don't want him to know. Don't worry, she says. He won't learn enough for it to be useful to him. We have code names for places, and we don't sign our names on messages. And Rourke will probably suspect we might try to deceive him by sending false information, so I doubt he'll believe everything he reads anyway. But what if he replies to someone pretending he's you? What if he manages to trick someone into revealing something important? Kala answers my question with a frown. How would he do that? He can't mimic my handwriting. Oh, yes, handwriting. I forgot about that part. I fold my arms over my chest again. So what do we do now? I ask, moving swiftly past the part where I tried to sound clever and instead made an idiot of myself. We do what Kala isn't particularly good at, Gaius says with a wry smile. We wait. Once everyone's back, including Chase, we plan properly. Failure is not an option. Failure is definitely not an option, Kala murmurs, staring at the floor. Okay, so we wait. I bite my lip and stare at the carpet. And we try not to imagine all the horrible things that are happening to the people we care about. And we try not to worry about what Rourke is planning next, and we try not to think about whether Ada survived that fall from the ledge of the island, or if maybe I killed her. I breathe in deeply, look around for an item of furniture that isn't already occupied by something else, and end up sitting on the edge of an armchair. Kala pushes a pile of scrolls onto the floor and takes a seat opposite me. It's hard to kill a fairy, Em, so I'm almost certain she survived. And if she did die, well, you were fighting her in self-defense. You never intended to kill her. Yes, but I want to explain that it's not just about whether it was an accident or not. It's about the fact that Danny was trapped inside that body with Ada. The woman who raised me for the first 12 years of my life also went off the edge of that cliff. That's what I feel terrible about. But I don't want to get into the whole Ada-Danny explanation right now, so I just shake my head. As for the other things we should be trying not to worry about, Kala continues, yes, I'm sure Rourke is planning something else since he failed to significantly enlarge his world. He was shouting at a guard about the rituals involved in claiming a territory, but he must be planning more than just that. She returns her gaze to Gaius and tells him about the Shadow World and how the two of us escaped. As she finishes, I notice movement near the door and look over to see a tray with two glasses gliding into the room. Oh, thank you, Kala says, reaching for one of the glasses. I didn't realize how thirsty I was until now. Neither she nor Gaius seem surprised by the tray's arrival, so I decide not to ask about it. I suppose this kind of thing is normal in fairy homes. Kitchens that automatically know when thirsty guests have arrived, or something like that. I reach over and take the second glass. Gold flecks float in clear liquid. It tastes like plain water, but I assume it contains magical properties of some sort. Before I can ask, Gaius says to Kala, "You mentioned seeing a witch with Prince Rourke in this shadow world?" Yes, I only glimpsed her briefly when we were hiding in one of the castle rooms, but she was definitely a witch. Gaius turns his attention to me. Do you know anything about the work she was doing for Prince Rourke? That might give us a clue as to what he's planning next. I take another sip of my drink before shaking my head. The witch's work didn't have anything to do with helping him extend his territory. I wrap both hands around the glass and prepare myself for the detailed explanation I knew I'd have to give at some point. She was helping him figure out how to reverse the changeling spell. For Ada and Daniela, the woman who was staying here before I... well, snuck back in and took her. It was Rourke's backup bargaining chip, in case I wouldn't agree to marry him. Calla holds up a hand. Okay, wait. I am totally lost now. Daniela Clark was a changeling? Like you? Like M? Gaius repeats. Since when is Emerson a changeling? Hang on, we'll get back to that, Calla says, waving away his question. What's this about Daniela and Ada? I press one hand over my face. I wish Zed had explained this entire thing to you before you knocked him out. That would have saved me having to do it. Calla tilts her head to the side. Zed knows the woman you thought was your mother? Thought was your... She isn't really your mother? Gaius asks. Ugh. I lower my hand, sit back, and explain from the beginning. I start with telling them about Zed's friend Danny, who is Griffin gifted. She could become two separate people. Danny and an identical person named Ada. I continue all the way through the story until the night Zed forced Ada and Danny to rejoin into one body so he could perform the changeling reversal spell. It was seriously weird to watch, I tell Calla and Gaius. First, the part where the two of them were pulled together into one body, and then the part where she began to look different as the changeling spell slowly reversed. I turn to Calla. The woman you must have thought was Ada, the blonde woman controlling all that glass on Velazar 2? That was Ada and Danny together. That's what they really look like. Calla's mouth hangs open slightly, and she blinks several times before replying. That's just almost too strange to believe. Yes, I've never heard of a changeling spell being done on an adult before. And on Velazar, well, I'd never seen Ada without a mask until then, so I didn't think anything of the fact that I didn't recognize her face. And obviously I had no idea she was the same person as Daniela. Yeah. I look down at my hands twisting together in my lap. And then my magic pushed her off the edge of that island, and now she might be dead. I swallow as I try to maintain control of my emotions. I know Danny isn't the person I always believed she was, but she isn't as bad as Ada. She just wanted to live a simple life with me. What she did in order to get that life was wrong, but she was still my mother for all those years, and I might have killed her. Calla reaches across the space between us and places her hand over mine. I doubt it. Fairies are tough, Em. And if Rourke was working with her, he would have ordered someone to retrieve her after she fell. He wouldn't have wanted to lose her griffin ability. Gaius slowly raises his hand, for all the world, as if he's requesting permission to ask a question. This is all extremely complicated and fascinating, he says. But can I ask again about M being a changeling? Because that would imply she was stolen from a fairy family as a baby, and I'm just... wondering. He pushes away from his desk and moves closer to me. He bends a little and squints as he scrutinizes my face. I don't want to say it, in case I'm wrong, but is it possible that maybe it's more than possible? Calla says, a smile spreading across her face for the first time since we walked in here. It's true. I finally located the one person who could confirm it for me yesterday. This is... Gaius looks across his shoulder at her. She stands and gestures toward me. Gaius, meet Victoria Larkinwood. His mouth drops open. He stares at me, then at Calla. When he finally finds his voice, he says, "That should have been the first thing you said when you ran in here. This is amazing." He hugs Calla, then leans down to hug me. I'm not a fan of strangers getting in my personal space, but I have a feeling I'm going to like this guy, so I gingerly pat his back before he pulls away. "I can't believe you ended up here," he adds, "with your family, and no one knew." Well, of course she ended up with us, Calla says. She has a powerful griffin ability and was unable to hide it, so she only ever had two options, really. Caught by the guild, or caught by us. If she didn't have a griffin ability, well, I'd rather not think about how we'd probably never have known she existed. My goodness! Gaius beams at me. This is all just beyond belief! How immensely unfortunate that we now have to plan a massive rescue operation instead of planning a celebration. Don't worry, we'll have that celebration, Calla says. Just gotta do the rescue thing first.
Of course, of course.
Gaius nods vigorously.
Well, can I get you some food? I know it's late, but you're probably hungry. We can have a small celebratory meal if you'd like.
Actually, I hesitate, hoping it isn't terribly rude to refuse a meal. I'm not that hungry.
Ah, yes, the drink.
Gaius gestures to the glass I placed on the floor during my long story about Ada and Danny. It contains nourishment of some sort. Oh, cool. I open my mouth to ask what the gold flecks are, but I find myself yawning instead. I think a bath and a sleep are in order, Calla says, for both of us. The word sleep is all it takes for my eyelids to feel as if a weight has been lowered onto them. I don't know how long I was passed out in that underground cell in the shadow world, but it doesn't feel like it was nearly long enough to make up for all the activity that came before it. Well, if we're not about to rush off somewhere right now, we're not, Calla says. However much I might wish we could. I squint at the darkness through the window. What time is it here, anyway? Traveling instantly between time zones is so confusing. Gaius looks across his desk at a contraption with numbers spinning slowly around miniature planets and pinpricks of light that might be stars. I don't have the first clue how to read it, but with just a glance, Gaius says, it's a little before midnight. I blink a few times. Yeah, okay. I could definitely sleep. Gaius accompanies us as we walk to the front door. I push both hands into my hoodie pocket, startled for a moment to find that Bandit is gone. I remind myself not to worry, though. He probably crawled out unnoticed in Gaius's study so we could explore. And with his knack of following me wherever I go, I'm sure he'll find his way back to me.
Sleep well,
Gaius tells us as we head down the porch steps. Thanks, I hope so, I answer, my attention already turning inward to the thoughts buzzing around my mind. You don't need to help, Calla says as we walk away. You're more tired than you think. I'm sure you'll be asleep before you know it. Even with everything to worry about? Hey. She reaches for my arm and pulls me to a stop. This is all going to work out. Sure. The rescue probably won't go exactly according to plan, but it will be a success. I've broken into plenty of places before, including Velazar Prison and both fairy palaces. Both? You've been inside the Unseelie Palace? Yes, I was there several days ago. I was too late, though. You'd already escaped. My point, she says as we continue walking, is that it's not impossible to break into Noxum and free Rin and Vi and the others. And that's if they don't free themselves before we get there. Your parents are pretty good at kicking butt when they get the chance. And when I'm not distracting them and allowing them to get caught, I mutter. Yes. Calla nods, her tone serious. I'm sure it was entirely your fault the guild managed to apprehend them. Can't possibly have had anything to do with the fact that they were fighting glass soldiers they had to be careful not to touch in case they turned to glass themselves, or that we were completely outnumbered because we didn't expect an Unseelie army as well as all the guardians, or the reinforcements that arrived in transporter pods. And that's all on top of the fact that we only ever planned to observe, not get involved in a small battle. None of that could possibly have had anything to do with them being captured. I cross my arms. Your sarcasm isn't helping.
Blaming yourself doesn't help either.
She looks up through the nearly transparent dome layer at the stars as she lets out a long sigh.
You know what, Em? Everyone makes mistakes, and trust me on this. The mistakes you've made don't come close to some